The following is a presentation of the Network University, an online promotion service. Hi, and welcome to The Informer. I'm your host, J.L. Thompson, here with my co-host today, Ms. Darlene Witherspoon, creator of the very informative blog, Success Tips with Darlene Witherspoon. The Informer is a presentation of the Network University and is dedicated to presenting programs to motivate and inform. Also, I'd like to thank our listeners who's participating in our segment, Businesses Around the Web, an audio referral service which is now integrated into our daily programming. Also, Safety Talk, our continued presentation of topics about personal safety matters. So stay with us. We think you'll enjoy the program. We'll be right back.
There's an old saying that goes, pray for sunshine, but be prepared for rain. In these uncertain times, that's sage advice, not only for our finances and careers, but for our families and daily lifestyle. You see, no one knows what events will trigger panic in the streets and a meltdown of law and order. But there's one website that can help us prepare for it all. SecureLifeSafetyProducts.com. At SecureLifeSafetyProducts.com, you can purchase safety products that are just right for your family's needs. Visit SecureLifeSafetyProducts.com.
Thanks for joining the show. The Informer, a presentation of the Network University at www.goldenbusiness.info. And thanks for joining our segment, Businesses Around the Web, where we showcase your website on the program, streaming on Block Talk Radio, the web's premier internet radio network. Visit the Network University. We offer programs for business development at www.goldenbusiness.info. Preparing to travel? Visit Travel Unlimited at www.travelunlimited.com for an array of travel options. Security your concern? Then you must visit SecureLifeSafetyProducts.com, a website for your safety. In need of business cards? Visit John's Cards at www.johnscards.com. All cards are offered. Baker's Delight. Baker'sDelight.com offers an array of delicious products. Again, thanks for joining this segment of The Informer. And for a limited time, The Informer is offering a referral-based introduction to businesses around the web. Internet radio is a powerful advertising medium that is sometimes overlooked by many marketers. Placing your website URL showcases your business to the world.
Now, when would be a good time to start on a good idea? That's simple, isn't it? Right now. Today. That's the time you want to start on your good idea. And you're going, but Larry, I got a lot of things planned today. You don't understand. You see, I got to stop by the cleaners, and then I got to go by the grocery store on the way home to get some bread and some milk. And then when I get home, oh, man, Larry, I'm really tired. I got to kick back for a little while, watch a little television. Then I got to fix dinner, and I got to sit down with the family, spend a little family time. Yeah, I don't care. You got a big list of excuses of all the stuff you got to do. Here's what you got to do. Today, you've got to get started on becoming a better version of who you really are. Today, not tomorrow. That's really the key idea. There's this great quote by General Patton who said, a good idea implemented today is better than a perfect idea implemented tomorrow. I like that. I really like that idea, and that's what I've always built my business on. That's what I've changed my life based on that one quote. Just do it today. Always today. I don't have time. You see, if you're one of those people who says, oh, I got plenty of time. No, you don't. There's no time. There's absolutely no time. Let me ask you a couple of questions. If you want to increase your sales, when would be a great time to start calling more customers? How about next month? No, that won't work. You need to start doing it today. That's when you ought to start calling more customers. If you've got an employee that's done a great job, when would be a great time to go over and say thank you and point out what a great job they've just done? Not tomorrow. You'd want to do that today, wouldn't you? If you have an employee that's absolutely incompetent and they're ruining your business and they're insulting your customers and they're causing chaos throughout your business, when do you want to get rid of that employee? Well, not tomorrow. You want to do it today. When should you start doing anything that's really worth doing? You need to do it today, not tomorrow, never tomorrow, always today. Remember this, TNT, TNT, today, not tomorrow. There's no time. Do it today. And here's why. You might be saying, it's going to take more time for me to get ready. No, it isn't. You need to work fast. Speed is what's going to keep you on track. You need to work as fast as you possibly can. Let me tell you why speed is important. When you work out of a sense of urgency, you will work from your gut. Your gut will do the right thing before you can outthink yourself. You see, if you sit back and say, well, we need to plan this and we need to think, and I'm not saying go off half-cocked and just get started on something. That's not what I'm talking about at all. But the more you plan and the more you think about it and the more you strategize, the more you do all of those things, you're going to start to take shortcuts. You're going to start to say, well, we could save a little over here. We could do this over there. Don't do that. Instead, just get started. By the time you have strategized about it, chances are you could have probably already finished. So I'm saying work fast, do it now, create a sense of urgency. Remember, there's no time. You have to get it done. And you know, when you expect to get the work done quickly, the work will get done quickly. That's what I've discovered is amazing. Work takes as much time as you allow for it. If you don't allow much time to get the work done, it won't take much time to get the work done. So get started and get started right now. You can improve your life today. When would be a good time to do it? Today, not tomorrow.
Again, thanks for joining the program. Our listeners will surely gain quality referrals. And each participant receives a link at the banner board back to their website. Visit Whitmacutio, Pete's Place School of Catering and Hospitality. Click the banner number 16 at the board and visit with Evelyn, wealthwithevelyn.com.
Now, I've talked about how I do coaching, and I've given an example of one of my favorite client interactions and the great things that he did and what we can all learn from him. Now let's talk about peer coaching. I'm frequently interviewed in the business press, and I'm often asked a question, what is the future of coaching, or what is the future of executive coaching? My answer is peer coaching. I think peer coaching is the wave of the future. I love the idea of peer coaching. I have PhD students doing research on peer coaching. One of my students, a man named Andrew Thornton, fantastic job of studying peer coaching, and so far, the results in positive behavioral change for people who have peer coaches are just about as good as the results for people that have fancy executive coaches. And what I like about this peer coaching is it's scalable. It's scalable. It's something that can be done with thousands of people.
Now, let me talk about how you can use this process to coach others and to get better. I'll talk about, for example, peer coaching. Here's how we teach people to do peer coaching, and you can also do it with your direct reports. Are you ready? Look in the face of that other person. Look in their eyes. Here's how peer coaching works. Are you ready? Gary and Darren. Here's the way it would work. Darren says, Gary, here's what I want to get better at. As judged by whom? Here's what you do. You go back to work and say, I want to get better at this, be a better listener, say. You involve all these people, and just very quickly, just a matter of seconds, I want to be a great listener. Give me ideas. They all give you ideas. What do you say? Then, once a month, you talk to Gary. Gary says, I want to be better at recognition. He gets ideas. Thank you. He makes a list. You talk to him, and he says, here's what I learned. Here's what I'm doing. You give him ideas to execute. You repeat the role. You give him ideas. We've been doing this with two PhD dissertations. The results have been spectacular. People are improving just as much as people that have fancy executive coaches. When does it fail? We've also started learning when it fails. Guilt and shame. he forgets to call you, he doesn't follow up, you know, then you make him feel bad, you know, then he just, you know, yeah, and yeah, same thing, you know, then he just blows away, right? No guilt, no shame. Positive, supportive. If he does something good, say something good. If he does something bad, just say, let's try next month. And what I like about this, it doesn't suck up hours every time. The other thing is positive. It doesn't feel punitive or painful or like you're beating people up. The other thing I love about this process, let's say, Sue, you're Monty's boss. Monty needs to have better relationships with his team. You say, Monty, here's the team members. Here's the behavior. Follow up with these people. What are you learning? You help him. Only this takes you out of that role playing God or judge. Now helping him get better, not just as judged by you, as judged by everyone around him. Make sense to you? And in my own coaching process, I don't get paid if my clients don't get better. Better is not judged by me. Better is not judged by my clients. Better is judged by everyone around my clients. There's a good way to test if someone believes what they're teaching. You're asking one question. Want to bet on it? They say, I believe it, but I wouldn't bet on it. They don't believe it. They say, here's the money. They believe it. I bet on this every time. So this is stuff that does work. If you qualify your clients right, they follow up with the process, you take it seriously, this stuff works great.
Well, how does the peer coaching work? The peer coaching is going to just be an extension of everything we've discussed so far. Feed forward, the coaching process, only done in a two-way dialogue with a peer. How does it work? Let's assume that I am your peer coach. You are my peer coach. First, you will need to get some feedback from either direct reports, which could be confidential feedback from your manager, could be indirect feedback. It really doesn't matter. You just need to come up with, here is an important behavior to change. Now, let me stop and cover something I haven't discussed so far. I'm sometimes asked a question, well, what if a person picks the wrong behavior? That would be a disaster. It's really not as bad as you might think. Let me explain why. See, our research shows that if you get better at pretty much any behavior, you get better as an overall leader. Sort of counterintuitive. What if a person picked the wrong behavior? You'd think, well, this wouldn't help them at all. Here's why that philosophy would not be correct. Let's say I need to become a better listener, yet I pick innovation. Well, as long as I go back and talk to all my coworkers and I say, I want to be more innovative, give me ideas for the future, do you know what they're going to tend to say? Why don't you listen more? Why don't you be more open-minded? Why don't you encourage input? Even if I pick the wrong behavior, as long as I engage in this follow-up process, they're going to tend to push me in the right direction anyway. Now, back to peer coaching. You talk to your peer coach talks to you, and the first question is, all right, let's establish two rules as peer coaches. Number one, what do you want to get better at? And number two, as judged by whom? Your role as a peer coach is not to evaluate the person, put the person down, make the person feel bad. Your role is to be positive and supportive, to focus on the future, to be honest, to give specific ideas, and to try to get better yourself. So you agree with your peer coach. Here's what I want to get better at. Here's as judged by whom. The peer says, here's what I want to get better at, as judged by whom. And you both make a contract. Your job is to help each other get better at what you choose, as judged by the people you choose. And again, the key motivation for change doesn't come from coach anyway. It comes from that person being coached. What happens? The person you're coaching does exactly what I've just described. Involved each of their key stakeholders in a feed-forward process and says, here's what I get better at. Give me ideas. Collects these ideas from all key stakeholders. You do the same thing. You collect these ideas from all your key stakeholders. Then about once a month, you have a dialogue that sounds like this. Who did you talk to? What did you learn? What are you going to do about it? And then if I'm the peer coach, I'd say, now, as your peer coach, here are my suggestions for execution. Here's some ideas I have that might really help you execute. The other person comes back and says, okay, great. Here's some ideas, too, to help you execute. I say thank you. The other person says thank you.
If you're in need of a domain or website, visit with Terry Petty at banner number 17. We think you'll find what you need. An independent certified coach with the John Maxwell Team, Regina Sampson. Click her back.
Well, I have good news for you. If you've been sitting there wondering just where to begin your business, or if you've been struggling with an idea for a business, or an idea for a product, or an idea for a service, or any sort of idea on how to attract more money into your life, and it seems like you just can't quite see it, I've got good news. And it's the whole idea of selling information. Now, this is really huge, especially on the internet, which is a place that I've been specializing in selling information products for the last 20-some years. And it's very simple to do. What you're going to do is look at your own passions, your hobbies, your experience, your education, to find out what you've been doing that other people would be interested in knowing how to do themselves. And in this case, once you put it down in writing, you can sell that information to them. So hear me out, because this is really fascinating and really juicy, and it's a great money-making opportunity for anybody, including you. There was a woman who came to visit me one time when I was living in Austin, Texas, and she had heard about the internet, she had heard about me, and she really couldn't believe that you could make money online. And we had lunch, and I was answering all of her questions, and she was very skeptical. And she kept saying things like she didn't see where she could make any money online, that she was only in her 20s, she had no real experience, no real education, no real unique background. So how could she make any sort of information product, any sort of digital product to sell on the internet? So I listened to her and I asked a few questions. I said, what do you like to do? Well, she likes to do biking. What are you interested in? Well, I'm interested in raw foods. And what is your passion? What are your experiences? What have you done for hobbies? And she said, well, I taught myself to play the guitar. Now, I listened to all of this, and she probably could have done an ebook on raw foods, maybe a raw foods cookbook. She might have done something on biking, maybe the secret biking trails of Texas or the Austin area. But when I heard that she taught herself how to play the guitar, my ears perked up, and I thought, now that sounds interesting. And I looked at her, and I said, how did you teach yourself to play the guitar? She said, I taught myself to play it in one weekend. And I thought, wait a minute, you taught yourself how to play the guitar in one weekend? She said, yes, it's just my own method, and I taught myself to play it because I wanted to play a few songs, and now I can play the guitar, and I started in one weekend. And I said, have you ever taught this to anybody else? And she said, no, there's lots of guitar instruction books out there. And I said, that doesn't matter. People always want to learn new things. If there's an audience for a particular service or product or hobby, there's a built-in demand for more information in that particular category. Well, I love guitars. I collect guitars. I'm always learning how to play the guitar. I'm always wanting to learn faster ways to play the guitar. I'm not much different from the audience who would be interested in how to learn how to play the guitar in one weekend. So I urged her to write down her method. She was a little resistant, but she was trusting me. She looked at my life, my lifestyle, and my name on the internet. She thought, well, I guess this Joe Vitale knows how to make money online. I'll listen to him. So she wrote up a little ebook, which she called Stripped Down Guitar. And in that little ebook, she explained how she taught herself how to play the guitar in one weekend, and she walked people through how to play the guitar themselves. And I read it, and I loved it. I thought it was very simple. It was very conversational. The book was not very long, and that's the wonder of ebooks or digital products or information products. They don't have to be very detailed. Get to the point, teach people what you promised to teach them, and stop. I told her to add a few photographs to the book because it would help people visualize what she was trying to explain. And then I told her to take her Word document and turn it into a PDF. And a PDF document is the most recognizable form, whether somebody's reading a document on a computer that's a Mac computer or a PC computer, almost every computer can read a PDF document. So she took her Microsoft Word book, turned it into a PDF document, and then showed it to me. And I said, this is an information product. I then told her how to put up a website. And she put up the website by going to GoDaddy.com. and buying the domain for strippeddownguitar.com, and then paying to have a website put up to sell her particular ebook. I then told her to go to ClickBank. ClickBank.com is a place where people can buy your particular product, and ClickBank will process the credit cards and send you a check every couple weeks. So I explained all this to her, and then I told her, let's tell the world about your ebook. So she began to market and promote it. And I told my list about it, so she immediately started to get some sales. She knew to go online and Google groups, and she was able to type in guitar instruction or guitar classes or guitar groups, and Google would bring back to her all the different places where people are interested in guitars and guitar instruction and guitar playing. She would then go to those different groups and just mention she came out with this book. I don't remember what she charged for the ebook. It might have been around $19.95 or $25.95, but she began to make thousands of dollars a day. And the punchline comes along because somebody who bought that book from her went to her and said, "I love your book so much, I want to buy the rights to distribute it myself." And she sold the rights to her ebook for $10,000. Now, this is pretty remarkable when you consider that when the young lady first came to me, she had no idea what to write about. She had no clue how to make a PDF or an ebook. She had no idea what ClickBank was or GoDaddy. She had no idea that she personally could attract money from something she was doing as a pastime or a passion for herself. She was truthfully broke when she first came to me. She admitted to me that she was actually borrowing money from her parents in order to pay her bills. Then she went from zero to making thousands of dollars a day to making a $10,000 payday. Now, I don't know how much $10,000 means to you, but it means a lot to me and it meant a lot to her. That was like winning the lottery. And that's what happens when you start creating information products. You actually create products that sell while you sleep. The first time I had this happen was a couple decades ago. I created an information product called Hypnotic Writing. It's now out there as a published book, and I still think you can get it as an ebook. But the first time we released it as an ebook, I think we charged $29.95 for it. You can charge whatever you want for an ebook because it's information and people are paying to get the solution. They don't care how big it is or how fancy it is. They just want the problem solved. So in this case, they wanted to learn how to write hypnotically, which is something I created and coined and specialized in. So I announced Hypnotic Writing, sold it for $29.95, and overnight, I sold 600 copies of it. Now, you have to understand, an ebook is not a printed book. It's something you read on your computer. It's a digital file, sometimes a text file, usually a PDF file, which means to you and me that there's nothing to print. There's nothing to warehouse. There's nothing to ship. This is, in many ways, an invisible product, but it's very real to the person buying it. And there's something else that's wonderful that happens here. There's instantaneous gratification. You instantly get the customer's money, and the customer instantly gets the product. It all happens in real time. So when I came out with Hypnotic Writing, I saw that this was a powerful, wonderful way to attract money in my life. I then came out with many other ebooks, including Hypnotic Selling Stories, the Hypnotic Swipe File, and a whole long series of Hypnotic This and That books to go with my brand that was me at that point in history.
One of the best skills you can possibly learn is how to market yourself. Marketing yourself is going to get you a lot further, a lot faster. Now, when you're going for a job, you are marketing yourself, but you're also selling the most difficult product to sell. That's why getting a job is so tough. It's actually much easier marketing products and services to people who want your products and services than it is to get a job. Because there's so many people out there looking at this one job, and when they're stopped. Now, here's a stress-free way to get started from breaking free of that job trap. Start a business part-time. Start a business part-time. Get your feet wet. When you start developing your skills while you still have a job, you have the security, or at least the illusion of it, so you can fake yourself out by still getting that paycheck, which is fine. But develop the skills necessary to be that entrepreneur. And as you develop your skills, your confidence level will go up. And pretty soon, you're going to find out that you can no longer afford to go to work. That's a day where you're going to rejoice, because you're looking at what you're bringing into your business only working a few hours a day versus your paycheck where you're working 50, 60 hours for, and you hate it. And you're looking at the two, you're going to go, wow, let's see, I only work a few hours here and I'm making more and I like what I'm doing versus going in all these hours at the office and I hate what I'm doing. All of a sudden, you can no longer afford it. So start off slow. This way, it'll take the pressure off. It makes it so much easier. Another thing to keep in mind is quit asking for permission. You're looking for permission to start your own business. Well, if that's what you're looking for, I'm giving it to you now. In a job, you always had to ask for permission. And as you grew up, that's a childhood rule. You always had to ask for permission. You had to ask for permission. Can I go out? Can I eat this? While in your job, can I take my vacation? Can I take it now? Can I get a pay raise? These are all childhood rules asking for permission. And I know you're looking for permission to start your own business. So you now have it. No more excuses. So go ahead, get started today. Do something.
Hello, this is Darlene Witherspoon, your friendly travel professional. Here at Travel Unlimited, we offer full-service travel agencies that can save you time and provide you with all the services you need with a friendly personal touch. Whether you are an individual, business, company, or group traveler, you can make travel arrangements that match your personal interests or needs online or offline. From cruises, tours, attractions, hotels, car reservations, to airline tickets, we offer travel options for local, national, and world travel. Hire our skilled travel agency to help you plan and book your next trip. Well-planned travel arrangements will give you the best value for your money. You can reach us at travelunlimited.gatewaytravelllc.com or by phone. Our toll-free number is 1-888-210-1575 or 773-417-1097. We look forward to hearing from you.
Hello again, and thanks for joining the program. I'm your host, J.L. Thompson. We hope you're finding it informative. And please, visit the website of the program referrals for all your business needs. You can also request a list of our referrals at the website, www.goldenbusiness.info, the home of the Network University. That's www.goldenbusiness.info.
Hi, this is J.L. Thompson, your host of The Informer Today. And did you know that your business your business could be advertised right here in this spot, this very spot that I'm speaking to you on right now, and sending your opportunity across the world. The Informer is a presentation of the Network University, which is aired each day on Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk is the world's largest and most influential social broadcasting network, attracting more than 18 million unique visitors per month. So advertising on the Informer will expose your online service or business opportunity to the world. If it's traffic to your business you're looking for, go on air with the Informer. I know you'll be glad you did.
You know, in all of our business management, our time is very important to our success. Try these suggestions. We think you'll find them helpful.
Clear your desk of everything but the one thing you're working on. If necessary, place things in drawers, on the credenza behind you, in the wastebasket, in cupboards, or even on the floor. Do whatever is necessary to turn your desk into a clear, clean, uncluttered work environment with just one thing, the most important thing before you when you begin. The second idea for getting yourself organized follows from the first. It is to have everything you need at hand before beginning. Like a good cook or a master craftsman or any professional, assemble all the tools of your trade before starting on the job. Get all the information that you will need. Get pens, notepads, stick-on notes, calculator, ruler, dictaphone, file folders, and anything else you can think of before you commence work. Idea number three is to resolve to handle every piece of paper only once. Make a decision to do something with it when you pick it up, and don't pick it up unless you're ready to act on it. It is better to stack it up and put it aside for appropriate action later. Stephanie Winston, in her book, Getting Organized, recommends that you use what she calls the TRAF system, where the word TRAF is spelled T-R-A-F. Each letter stands for a specific action. T stands for toss. One of the best time management tools in any home or office is the wastebasket. The fastest way to save time in reading anything is to simply throw it away. This applies to junk mail, unwanted subscriptions and catalogs, sales circulars, and anything else that is not relevant to your goals. Use the wastebasket to get rid of reading materials that have been hanging around for months. Ask yourself, if I did not read this, would there be any negative consequences? If the answer is no, then throw it away as fast as you can. The next letter in the TRAF system is R. R means to refer or delegate. When you pick up a piece of paper, ask yourself if there is someone else who should be acting on this. Is there someone else who can do it better than you? Is there anyone else to whom you can delegate action? The third letter in the TRAF system is A for action. These are the pieces of paper, letters, proposals, and so on that you must personally do something about. So get yourself a file folder and put the word action on the tab. Have the folder handy. When you come across something that you need to do something about, simply put it in the file to work on later. The last letter is F, which stands for file. But before you file anything, remember that 80% of papers filed are never needed, used, or seen again. Designating something to be filed creates work. Before you decide to put something in your files, ask, what would happen if I couldn't find this piece of paper? Ask, what would be the negative consequences of not being able to have this information available? If there are no negative consequences, or very little would happen, or if you could get the information somewhere else, then throw the piece of paper away. By the way, I initially found it quite difficult to use the wastebasket so generously. But with experience, I have found that very little of what I have thrown away has ever been needed again. The habit of tossing rather than saving and filing has been a big time saver for me, as it has been for many others. The purpose of the TRAF system is to get you to take action on a piece of paper when you pick it up. Do something, anything, with the piece of paper. Move it along at least one step. One of the greatest time wasters of all is continually picking up the same piece of paper, reading it, putting it down, and having to come back to it later, over and over. The fourth idea for getting yourself organized is, when you're finished with it, put it away. Complete your transactions. Start with a clean workspace and end with a clean workspace. There is something deeply satisfying about task completion, and that means leaving nothing out. Discipline yourself to finish what you start. Teach and encourage others to finish their work and put things away. Especially teach your children by setting a good example. One of the hardest things for people to learn is the habit of putting things away, but it is a habit that serves them all their lives.
What is the one common thing that all of the most powerful and happy people have in common? They live their soul purpose. I cannot emphasize this enough. What percentage of your happiness is lost by not living your soul purpose? How about your energy? How about your peace? See, peace of mind is when you're in harmony with your soul purpose. And passion follows purpose, so be clear on your purpose. The more clear you are on your purpose, the more you hone in and are powerful with your perspective. Meaning when you have a limitless perspective, when you recognize that the world's abundant, what you're going to find is there's so many opportunities, which ones do you pay attention to? If you're not clear about your purpose and if it's in alignment with your purpose, you can get distracted. You can get derailed. You lose that focus and all of a sudden it gets complicated. Life is made to be simple yet profound. The most profound way to live is living your soul purpose. It's who you are. It's who you were meant to be. As you get clear about your soul purpose, you now have vision. So you would be either a natural leader, whether it's behind the scenes and people can count on you, or whether it's you start to lead and make a difference because of your example. People that live their soul purpose have to understand all five tracks of wealth, because any track of wealth that isn't identified and isn't cultivated and you're not a proper steward over, can keep you from expressing your soul purpose. So let's do a little exercise in the tracks of wealth. Number one, on a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being its ideal, where would you rank your financial life? Number two, in regards to living your soul purpose and expressing your soul purpose, on a scale of 1 to 10, how would you rank your living soul purpose? Number three, your mentality. On a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being that you're intellectually stimulated, that you're constantly having ideas, that you live abundantly, how are you doing with your mentality? Number four, in the physical realm, on a scale of 1 to 10, how is your health? How is your nutrition? How is your physical energy? And number five, in the social realm, on a scale of 1 to 10, how are your relationships? The thing that I found about soul purpose is that there's really one of two things that are going to happen. Either you're going to have a forced correction or a course correction. A forced correction is a bankruptcy, it's a divorce, it's absolutely kind of a rock bottom situation where you feel like, I have no other choice but to change or to take a better course. A course correction is kind of like when I flew here. When I flew to do this recording, the plane wasn't going in the specific direction 90% of the time. It was constantly course correcting so that we could finally end at the destination. So course correction is, you're proactive with your study, you're doing a producer power hour, you're actually doing these exercises in your workbook, you're engaging in conversations, and you'll still make certain mistakes, but you can course correct rather than neglecting, having ignorance, and have it finally creep up on you in such a powerful way that you're forced to correct. People find this out at the doctor many times. They had years and years of high blood pressure, and it impacts their health, which inevitably will impact their wealth. And they're forced to correct that if they want to live. But there's other people that understand, well, I'm going to go get a checkup. I'm going to make sure that I exercise. And they stay ahead of the game. And then they course correct if they get off course. A lot of people ask me if soul purpose really pays off financially. I remember my book, Killing Sacred Cows, got a review in the New York Post. And the guy said, love the concepts, a lot of self-development, helps you understand certain things financially, but I'm a little bit worried that if everyone lived their sole purpose, we'd be on beans and rice alone. See, there is this myth out there that somehow living your sole purpose means that you got to be the starving artist. But the great thing is when everyone else lives their sole purpose, the artist becomes someone that can get their music out there because someone else is producing it. Someone's maybe even helping write it. Someone's burning it to a CD and it's getting out there in the world. So we all live our sole purpose and we become wealthier. The interesting thing about soul purpose is many people want to delay living it. They think retirement's going to be kind of that time for soul purpose because they think of their family or they think of travel or they think of experiences as something that helps them enjoy life. And this is in my book, Killing Sacred Cows. It was a study done by Sroli Blotnick, and it says they made little or no money investing. And what happened was these people, they all wanted to be millionaires, and he took 1,500, and about a third of them dropped out, either due to death or due to moving or whatever it might be. But all of them wanted to be millionaires. So there was 1,057 that finished the study, and 83 became millionaires. But what they found was that the people that didn't become millionaires, for the most part, were trying to chase the money first and then live their passion. But when Mr. Blotnick's team interviewed participants in the beginning of the study, the most widely shared impression they found was that great wealth can come to you only as a result of doing things that you don't want to do. So this is the obstacle to sole purpose. Oh, I could do that later. They also noted that from the start, most participants assumed that chance would play a decisive role in determining who became wealthy. Once again, a myth that we covered earlier. We said prosperity is not a game of chance. They found that the 83 people that became millionaires shared certain characteristics. Not only were they persistent, but they didn't mind handling some of the pettier things at times. I think about this from a mom standpoint. If she's changing diapers, is that the best expression of her sole purpose? Well, you have to handle certain things, right? You have to deal with some of the dirty work to express your sole purpose. You might have to build the stage or help be part of building the stage where you get to speak to the millions from. It's not that it's just all glamorous the whole time. Another characteristic they found is that these people were increasingly non-competitive towards the people that they were working with. So a lot of people think that competition and capitalism, the way to go is you got to win for someone else to lose, but I believe in co-opetition, where you're still competitive in your sole purpose, meaning you want the best that you can possibly put forth, but you're cooperative by helping others out. I've made a lot of money by actually teaching other financial professionals and financial service people the very things that I made my money with, the very things I was teaching my clients, and I didn't hold anything back. And interestingly enough, when I first did it, I didn't charge anything. I just got together a study group, but it started to be that we had over 100 people in it. And what would happen is people would call me all the time in between, and I thought, all right, to be able to be a better steward, to be able to be more responsible, to be able to be more profitable, therefore serving people in a greater capacity, I'm going to have to start charging. And rather than having people fly from all over the place, which started to happen, I just created a mentoring call. And they could ask for a half hour any questions that they wanted. They could email at any time and we'd give them a response within 7 days from the email. And then we would do twice a month where we would speak for an hour on the topics that were most consistently asked. Now I charge for that. So I was making money training the competition, which ended up turning into a process that I created for advisors, which helped improve the industry. Too many people want to hoard that, keep that quiet, but it was actually a good expression of my sole purpose. What Blotnick also found was they originally expected the people in their sample to become wealthy by taking the money they earned at work and investing it wisely in such things as stocks, bonds, and real estate. They thought that there'd be no way for them to really become rich by just having more income because they were more knowledgeable and more productive. But it didn't actually work out that way. More often than not, they made most of their money to become millionaires by their own production, by their own abilities, not by putting it in some stock that was supposed to grow. So in short, what the study really unveiled was that the main source of wealth for the successful participants was that they found something they loved to do and they did it well. This was case after case. They did increasingly well occupationally, while their pursuit of investment profits proved to be largely a waste of time. In the long run, it was their work that made them rich. So what's the source of true wealth? It's you. You're the one that dictates and determines whether or not you're wealthy. Only you can say that you're broke. Some things that are critical to make sure that you're living, expressing your sole purpose, and that you're going to be able to invest wisely, it really comes down to how much time and money you're spending on your education on an annual basis. And each year it should be accelerating, not decreasing. Too many people, when they finish school, they spend less and less money on their education because they figured, oh, I went to school, that's over. Not you, you're listening to this program, but you want to keep increasing that. I found in my life, if I put time aside and I put money, that those are two critical pieces of the equation for me to be successful anywhere. Even when it came down to meditation, as soon as I put additional time, but I paid more attention when I put the money to put in a meditation room in my house. Now all of a sudden, I really had the space for it. Have you been attending any seminars? What education or experience have you had to really live your sole purpose? Even with all of these exercises, all of this knowledge, you may still be thinking, will I be able to find my sole purpose and how long will it take and, oh, I just don't know. Here's a simple exercise. List the people that you admire most. Who do you admire? And why do you admire them? If you list the things that you admire most in them, what you're going to find is those are attributes and characteristics that you have too. You cannot admire something in someone else that you don't recognize exists. And the way that you recognize that it exists is through your own experience. What I've found is soul purpose is not only the most profitable thing I've found in my life, but the most enjoyable. And it's not something that's exclusive to my career. This happens with my family. How can I create traditions? How can I create value? How can I create the space, whether it's date night or whether it's playing with my son? That's all expression of my soul purpose. And any day that I'm not living and expressing my soul purpose is a day that wasn't worth living. Not every single activity, not every single moment is the perfect expression of soul purpose. I still have scarcity creep into my life. But when you're abundant, you'll be able to recognize your soul purpose. When you're abundant, you'll be able to live powerfully and create massive value. But the best way to be a producer is to be that super producer that produces in their soul purpose, that expresses the world, expresses the best they have to the world through their soul purpose. The reason it doesn't take money to make money, the reason that high risk doesn't equal high return, is because your soul purpose is already fully formed within you. You just have to recognize it. When you recognize it and you create value with it, it's inevitable that you're going to have the life that you want.
All participants in the program, businesses around the web, also receive a banner placed on the banner board and linked back to your website. Hello again, and thanks for joining the program. I'm your host, J.L. Thompson, sitting in for Ms. Darlene Witherspoon of Success Tips with Darlene. You know, the Network University banner board is presented across the web to opportunity service and online product seekers. Your banner presents high traffic possibilities to your website. We also encourage all participants in the program to visit and use the banner board listing. So visit the banner board at www.goldenbusiness.info. Click on the link, banner board. Now you can experience the evolution of coffee. Gano Excel, visit James the Healthy Coffee Guy at the banner board. You know, while at the banner board, visit with Don. For lead lightning, all businesses need to generate
Most people do not know how to think. When they're faced with a problem, they will go to any length to avoid thinking. They will ask advice from the most illogical people, usually people who don't know any more than they do, next-door neighbors, members of their families. Very few of them have reference books. But much more important than that, only one in I don't know how many thousands will take a large notepad, write the problem at the top of the page, and then deliberately turn on his or her thinking apparatus. But some people do think. They do indeed. In order to reflect a moment on the human mind, consider what it's accomplished. As you do, realize that we are developing so rapidly that we've come further in the realm of progress in the past 50 years than in all the preceding 10,000 years of human civilization. Of all the scientists who ever lived, it's estimated that 90% of them are alive today. We've reached in the area of ideas and human advancement a plateau so high it was undreamed of by even the most optimistic forecasters as recently as 30 years ago. But every new idea triggers additional ideas, so that now we're in an era of compounding advancement on every front and in every area that stagger the imagination. The harnessing of the power of the sun in our atomic plants and ships, the speed of light computers, which in minutes save months and years of calculating drudgery. Every man-made thing you see and touch spawned from the most powerful agency in the world, the human mind. Dr. Harlow Shapley of Harvard has said that we're now entering an entirely new age of man. He calls it the Psychozoic Age, the age of the mind. And you, my friend, own one, free and clear. Now let's look at a few facts. The 40-hour week, long standard, is in imminent likelihood of being even further shortened. This means that the average working person has, at his disposal, an enormous amount of free time. In fact, if you'll total the hours in a year and subtract the sleeping hours, if he or she sleeps 8 hours every night, you'll find that this person has about 6,000 waking hours, of which less than 2,000 are spent on the job. Now, this leaves 4,000 hours a year when a person is either working or sleeping. These can be called discretionary hours with which that person can do pretty much as he or she pleases. So that you can see the amazing results in your own life, I want to recommend that you take just 1 hour a day, 5 days a week, and devote this hour to exercising your mind. You don't even have to do it on weekends. Pick 1 hour a day on which you can fairly regularly count. The best time for me is an hour before the others are up in the morning. The mind's clear, the house is quiet, and if you like, with a fresh cup of coffee, this is the time to start the mind going. And here's one good way to do it. During this hour every day, take a completely blank sheet of paper. At the top of the page, write your present primary goal, clearly, simply. Then, since our future depends upon the way in which we handle our work, write down as many ideas as you can for improving that which you now do. Try to think of 20 possible ways in which the activity that fills your day can be improved. You won't always get 20, but even one idea is good. Now remember two important points with regard to this. One, this is not particularly easy. And two, most of your ideas won't be any good. When I say it's not easy, I mean it's like starting any other habit. At first, you'll find your mind a little reluctant to be hauled up out of that old familiar bed. But as you think about your work and ways in which it might be improved, write down every idea that pops into your head, no matter how absurd it might seem. Let me tell you what'll happen. Some of your ideas will be good and worth testing. The most important thing, however, that this extra hour accomplishes is that it deeply embeds your goal into your subconscious mind, starts the whole vital machinery working the first thing every morning, and 20 ideas a day, if you can come up with that many, total 100 a week, even skipping weekends. An hour a day, 5 days a week, totals 260 hours a year and still leaves you 3,740 hours of free leisure time. Now, this means you'll be thinking about your goal and ways of improving your performance, increasing your service. 6.5 full extra working weeks a year, 6.5 40-hour weeks devoted to thinking and planning. Can you see how easy it is to rise above that so-called competition? And it'll still leave you with 7 hours a day to spend as you please. Starting each day thinking, you'll find that your mind will continue to work all day long, and you'll find that at odd moments when you least expect it, really great ideas will begin to bubble up from your subconscious. When they do, write them down as soon as you can. Just one great idea can completely revolutionize your work and, as a result, your life. If you want to develop the muscles of your body, you take daily exercise of some sort. The mind is developed in the same way, except that the returns are out of all conceivable proportion to the time and energy spent. The mind of man can lift anything. His muscles, even the best developed, are puny alongside those of some of the dumbest animals on earth. If man had depended on his muscles for survival, he probably would have disappeared, as did the dinosaurs, which were, incidentally, the most physically powerful and most successful creatures that ever lived. Let me give you just some of the results people have reported to me as a consequence of following this one-hour-a-day routine. An office equipment salesman sold more of his company's product in 1 month than he informally sold in an entire year during the 4 years he'd been with his company. A Sunday school teacher with 5 pupils set a goal of 30 pupils. Her last letter told me she now has a class of 25. She's almost reached her goal. I've used this system for years, and it's given me some of the most gratifying and rewarding experiences of my life. And it costs only 5 hours a week. 5 hours out of 168. Is it worth it? It's like spending 5 hours a week digging in a solid vein of pure gold, because your mind is all of that, and much more. Each time you write your goal at the top of the sheet of paper, don't worry or become concerned about it. Think of it as only waiting to be reached, a problem only waiting to be solved. Face it with faith and bend all the great powers of your mind toward solving it. And believe me, solve it you will. You know, this puts each of us in the driver's seat.
Hi, this is Vic Conant with How to Become Indispensable at Whatever We're Doing. Not a bad objective. At first glance, it seemed to me it should be easy to become indispensable. As an employer, I'm always desperately looking for the person who is the man on the white horse, as Earl Nightingale used to say. Or as we say today, the person on the white horse. It's that person who can ride in and help contribute something extraordinary to my company. I'll do anything for that person. And if worst comes to worst, he or she will be the last person I'll let go if I'm forced to downsize. But just because I can identify this person easily by his or her actions doesn't mean it's easy to become indispensable. Becoming indispensable implies being able to perform some critical function that no one else within or outside of the organization can. In reality, very few people actually attain this rarefied position of indispensability. I think the biggest reason is that the typical individual never perceives the possibility of becoming indispensable. Because of environment, background, self-esteem, etc., the possibility never fully comes into consciousness as a serious thought. When our average person joins a company, he eventually masters the job he's given and may even be considered a good B player. If no outside force enters in, our hero is liable to keep doing that same or similar job the rest of his career. The problem is that consultants like Jim Collins, the author of the red-hot management book Good to Great, encourage us to only keep A-plus players on our team. If that becomes our corporate philosophy, and Jim makes a great case for this, where does that leave our B-player? He certainly would fall into the dispensable category. So how does a person who desires to be indispensable actually accomplish this? To make this more interesting and hopefully more valuable, here's a little exercise for us. I know that you're already way above average or you wouldn't be an NC customer. But looking at your life, where might you want to be more indispensable? There may be an area that would benefit you either in income or job security or some other way if you are more indispensable. Once we've decided on the area we want to improve, how can we accomplish this task? Let's go back briefly to Jim Collins and his A-plus players. Wow, that seems like a lot to be asked of someone, to be an A-plus player. But as sports spectators, don't we demand that the professional teams that we follow only keep the absolute best players on their team? Should a business be any different? The companies that made the designation of great in the Good to Great study certainly decided to go this route with outstanding results. But how can any of us average Joes hope to get to this level? Well, before we give up, let's look at how Jim Collins refers to these individuals. He says they don't need to be tightly managed or fired up. They're smart enough to see the industry changes coming and flexible enough to deal with them. They have character, a work ethic, basic intelligence, and a dedication to fulfilling commitments and values. They don't blindly acquiesce to authority. They're strong leaders in their own right, building their own arenas into the best. They meld their strength into whatever it takes to make the company great. They aren't above arguing and debating, sometimes violently, in pursuing the best answers for the common good of the company. Now, to me, none of these characteristics seem unattainable. Maybe it is possible to become indispensable after all. Certainly, the first words that pop into my mind when I think of becoming indispensable are immersion, commitment, involvement, and passion. I've seen so many employees, as well as friends and acquaintances, who never really commit to becoming a major contributor in their company or other endeavors. There's that word commitment again. They don't seem to realize that during the same number of hours that they're putting into their jobs, by thinking of their jobs differently, they could make a dramatic difference in their ultimate contribution, and predictably their rewards would increase in proportion. They get stuck in the mode of only doing what's expected of them. It's as if their job is a bubble, and they live contentedly inside it, never wanting to, or maybe just never knowing that they might have the capacity to break out of it and become bigger, or you might say, indispensable. Another idea for becoming indispensable comes again from our friend and mentor, Earl Nightingale. He teaches a classic lesson that can be applied here. He states that if we simply spend 1 hour a day studying our profession, we can become a nationally recognized expert in 5 years, even if we don't think on weekends or vacations. Just 1 hour a day. This is one of those lessons that's so simple, we're likely not to take it seriously. Many of us will start such a potentially life-changing exercise, but just like the way we treat most diets and New Year's resolutions, we'll lose resolve and soon we'll be off in some new direction. The 5 years will go by anyway. The question is, how will we spend it? It gets back once more to our time prioritization. We can't do everything. Is this idea of spending an hour a day becoming an expert in your profession one that you want to add to your own top priorities? If not, that's fine. There will be many more good ideas coming your way in the next few minutes for you to consider. But I encourage you to continue with our exercise. Keep in mind where you would like to be more indispensable. It will cause you to seize on ideas you might not otherwise.
Visit with J. Mac, yourdailyincome.com business platform. And please visit with Richard at the Banner Board for an enlightening marketing lesson. You're listening to The Informer. I'm your host, J.L. Thompson, and we hope you enjoyed the topics today. We hope you found them enlightening. Thank you for joining us. And thanks for joining the program, Business Around the Web. Please visit the Banner Board for opportunities, services, or products. You can also join the program and have your website on the Banner Board at goldenbusiness.info. That's www.goldenbusiness.info, the home of the Network University. Thank you again. Join us tomorrow.